Case number 20-5290, Stephanie Troutman versus Louisville Metro Department of Corrections et al. Argument not to exceed 15 minutes per side. Mr. Alfonsi A. Gerhardstein, you may proceed for the appellant.
Good afternoon. May it please the court, I'm Al Gerhardstein, and along with Larry Simon, I represent the family of Charles Troutman, who was a pretrial detainee when on November 24th, 2015, he became the sixth suicide by hanging in a 24-month period at the Louisville Metro Detention Center. His daughter, plaintiff Stephanie Troutman, is following the proceeding on live stream, and along with counsel for 10 civil rights organizations who filed an amicus brief in this case. This case should be tried. The district court erred by granting summary judgment when there were contested issues of material fact as to each of the three defendants. The district court also erred by declining to apply the Kingsley objective reasonableness test to the pretrial detainee's claim of inadequate medical care. The district court correctly held that Troutman had a serious medical need given his suicidal tendencies. But where it went wrong is that it said that there was no dispute of fact regarding the procedure to be followed when a suicidal inmate is transferred to a more dangerous single cell with bars. In fact, there was quite a bit of contested fact around that procedure. Cox himself testified in one place that it was a courtesy call to medical that didn't need to be returned. In another place, he said, in fact, that he needed verbal clearance in order to transfer Mr. Troutman to the single cell with bars. And this is verified in four other places. First of all, when you look at the X-Jail software package and you read the page with the entries on Troutman, you see that Cox entered on November 24th an entry that said that he's waiting to hear back from medical, which certainly suggests that he's got a clearance procedure. That's at page ID 4468. And then there are two really important witnesses. Ernst was a classification coordinator, and he testified that it was a clearance process, not a notification process. And Schindler was the charge nurse, and he testified that about 18 months before the Troutman suicide, he specifically said there was a practice of staff sending an email to him, and then they're not supposed to move the inmate until he responds. And also in the investigation.
Since our forte is legal issues, I'd love to hear about the Kingsley issue, which seems to be an open legal question.
That is a huge issue. We believe that it's time for the Sixth Circuit to adopt the Kingsley standard. And I say this because what happened was in Kingsley in 2015.
Can I ask you a question about just a threshold question? We did adopt the Kingsley standard for
excessive force before
the Supreme Court did, and I think it's Aldini is the case.
That's at
the
right, same time, our office.
Congratulations. But we also had the two-prong objective and subjective standard existing at the same time for deliberate indifference cases. So the fact that we were affirmed in one area, you're saying we should, that means that we have to reverse our own precedent in a related area?
No, you don't. Because think about what deliberate indifference is. Deliberate indifference is actually, it describes the point at which inadequate medical care amounts to unnecessary and wanton infliction of pain or cruel and unusual punishment under the Eighth Amendment. That's what we learned in Estelle. That doesn't apply if you're a pretrial detainee, because you aren't, you're not supposed to be controlled by the Eighth Amendment. You're not entitled to any punishment, or you're not supposed to be punished at all. You're innocent until proven guilty. We have to look at this under the Due Process Clause. And under the Due Process Clause, the rights arise from liberty interests that are controlled under the 14th Amendment. So it's an objective reasonableness standard. What does that mean for a medical claim, to go directly to your question? First, we got to keep the issue. It needs to be a serious medical issue because that'll keep away the medical malpractice claims.
That's right. What's the part you want us to change?
Well, second, we have to have intentional conduct. so that we don't get negligence. And third, we have to look at objective reasonableness rather than subjective intent or perception of the defendant. So the way this would change is deliberate indifference to a serious medical need becomes objective unreasonableness in light of the serious medical need. You'd be looking
deliberate. That takes the deliberate out of deliberate indifference.
Right. It takes the perception, the subjective perception of the risk, and shifts it over to whether a reasonable officer would appreciate the risk to the inmate in light of the obvious consequences. And that makes sense.
It's like a recklessness or negligence standard.
Well,
let me just talk for a second. So the terms are deliberate indifference, and the Supreme Court has always said that deliberate means deliberate. In other words, recklessness and negligence isn't enough. And so I completely get excessive force claims, which are intentional actions, and why the Supreme Court did what it did in Kingsley, affirming our precedent. But it seems like you're removing the deliberate from the deliberate indifference, and you're creating a whole new claim, a whole new theory.
No, it's actually. Dial back to your point about recklessness. When we looked at this issue in Farmer versus Brennan, the Supreme Court considered civil recklessness and it considered criminal recklessness, and it went through the two different definitions. And it actually thought about civil recklessness and said, no, that's too low for an Eighth Amendment claim. Mm-hmm. And it went with deliberate indifference to a serious health or safety risk as the standard, borrowing it from the criminal recklessness area. Here, we should go back to civil recklessness. A reasonable person would recognize that putting a suicidal inmate into a cell that has bars and a sheet is going to be very dangerous for that suicidal inmate. A reasonable person, regardless of whether the defendant himself or herself perceived the risk, a reasonable person would perceive the risk. And going ahead and acting when a reasonable person wouldn't, that's civil recklessness, and that's how the Kingsley standard would work on remand in this case.
Would you argue that same position, that a reasonable person would have known that whether or not there had been the previous five suicides in that 24-month period, how should that fact be analyzed?
Well, that's going to depend on which defendant you're looking at. Cox may not have known about all five suicides, but I listed some of the issues that he did know about that were unique to this defendant. Bolton certainly knew about the five previous suicides and had recommendations, for example, that they institute a formal policy so that there'd be medical clearance before they put inmates into the cells with bars. And he also had a recommendation that they cover the bars based on these prior suicides. He did neither. So his conduct, a reasonable warden would take some measure, you know, covering the bars, setting up a system that actually worked to screen these inmates medically, or putting in this ex-jail system a no bars alert, which they eventually did, for anybody who has a prior suicide, like Troutman, which was only 11 days before he was transferred to the single cell with bars. So on Bolton's claim, you've got contested issue of fact that go to the Kingsley standard. And then that also helps us with the claim against Metro, because of course, Metro has no qualified immunity. And Metro, we have to show that there's a policy of the unit of government that is the moving force behind the constitutional violation. Well, we better understand what the constitutional violation actually is before we put Metro on trial. So that's one of the reasons we really have to adopt the Kingsley standard now. And with respect to Metro, we've got both policy arguments by a policymaker, that's Bolton, and he failed to implement a policy that actually accomplished the screening, and he also had classification and training issues. We have evidence that there was an email that was sent out by the classification coordinator who said, let's do these medical screenings before we send inmates to cells with bars. But that email got lost. And then when Cox gets hired as a classification officer, he never gets trained on the clearance process. He never learns anything about the clearance process. And because there was a lack of training and there was a lack of supervision to make sure that people were properly screened, the entity's on the hook under a classification and training theory. So this is very important.
Can you just go back to the legal standard? Can you frame for me again the test that you want us to apply? It's objectively negligent?
No, I wouldn't use the term negligent at all. You look at the objective reasonableness in light of this serious medical need. So would a reasonable officer appreciate the risk to the inmate by proceeding with conduct where the consequences are so obvious? So we substitute the subjective perception of the defendant and instead put in testing the defendant's conduct against the reasonable officer. We still have like a civil recklessness.
That strikes me as negligence. I mean, it just seems like a negligence.
No, it's reckless.
Not maybe recklessness even, but.
Yeah, well, civil recklessness would work. And that's what the court was considering.
That consisted with Farmer. I mean, you mentioned Farmer earlier, but Farmer seems to reject negligence or even something higher than that. Obviously known isn't even enough. There's got to be, I mean, again, the claim is deliberate indifference, and it just feels like we're losing the deliberate part. But
Farmer was considering this in the context of an Eighth Amendment claim. Kingsley is considering it in the context of a claim of due process.
I understand we don't punish people pre-trial, and that's a distinction between the Eighth Amendment and the 14th Amendment. But this all just seems to be to ignore the basis of the claim, which is deliberate indifference, and that there's a rewriting of it. And I've said that three times, so I'll stop. But that's the part I'm struggling with.
Well, we would ask that you look at the contested issues of fact as to each of the three defendants, reverse the grant of summary judgment, and we ask that you remand for trial under the Kingsley standard. And I hope that I didn't check the timer, but I did try to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you. Mr. Ogburn? You're muted, sir.
I'm sorry.
Ma'am. Okay.
May it please the court, counsel. I have a couple of issues with what's been said. And what I want to start out with is the thing with Cox is this. There is a policy that was applied at Louisville Metro Department of Corrections. And the policy provided that medical personnel would determine whether an inmate was a suicide risk. And if so, would either separate that inmate from general population, which they did to Troutman at first, or place him back in general population with a no bars alert. What they have in Louisville Metro, they have a system called XGL, where they use that, it's a software system used to manage inmate transfers. So when you have a classification officer, such as Cox, he's looking at his screen, and immediately what would come up, if this person is deemed to be suicidal, would be a no bars alert. There was none issued on this case. And what Cox, why he didn't make the phone call, he did make a phone call, but he didn't wait for that phone call because on his XGL system was a nurse's note that released Troutman to general population. And there was no bars alert placed on that. He also knew from other things that the psychiatrist had determined that Troutman was not suicidal after the 7 days. The medical personnel had the responsibility to reassess him, and that may not have occurred in his case, but Cox doesn't know that.
So, I know these facts are important, but can you start by telling me, should we be applying the Kingsley standard, which is what Mr. Gerhardt advocates, or should we not? And tell me why, regardless of your answer.
Okay, I think we should not, for this simple reason. I think medical claims are quite a bit different than when you're dealing with excessive force cases. Because in excessive force cases, there's always more than likely an intentional element in there. And so it is a different standard because you always have the intent and whether or not that was reasonable.
Couldn't you also have that that action of intentional, deliberate indifference? A person could, a person who was detained pre-trial could have a serious medical need known to the institution and just have it ignored in the face of request or self-advocacy. Wouldn't that rise to intentional? And so why would it, explain in light of that
statement there. I think the standard of deliberate indifference pretty much assumes that the act had to be intentional.
Right.
Which it already is in an excessive force case. And mm-hmm. So that's what you look at on a deliberate indifference claim, especially when you're dealing with things like suicide, which suicide is so hard to predict. No one can predict a suicide. If they could, no one there wouldn't be suicide. And what you have here is you had no suicidal ideation. He didn't say, I'm going to commit suicide.
But hadn't he already tried to commit suicide? Hadn't there already been an attempt?
Yes, he had, but he had been cleared by the medical personnel. And the medical personnel were involved in this case, and they're gone now. But the medical personnel determined he was non-suicidal, which... in the Perez case and other cases, any corrections officer is allowed to rely upon medical testimony. And you had 7-day period where he had no suicidal ideation. He didn't tell anybody he was going to commit suicide in the future. So you have a situation that, you know, it's their suicide in order to basically... For Cox to have committed any kind of offense would have been if there was a strong likelihood of suicide if he had ignored Troutman's condition. Cox said specifically that, you know, mental health makes the decision. I relied on what Nurse Temple said. He didn't call in because the medical normally in the XPL system, medical records aren't included in the XPL system. So, but in this particular instance, there was Nurse Temple acting on behalf of the psychiatrist. Her document, her medical records, his medical records, Troutman's were in the medical records. So he saw those medical records before he released him, coupled with the fact that there was a no bars in it. And, you know, if you get into a negligence standard, well, you know, that's what the state law claim is. You know, that the court remanded. They have that ability to bring this up in state court. But in terms of the deliberate indifference, there was no deliberate indifference in this case on behalf of either Director Bolton or Louisville Metro or Department of Correction. You know, and the fact that there were other suicides, there's no implication that was because of any particular policy. All those suicides had different reasons, which, you know, I don't have the time to discuss in this particular case. But it's one of those things that since that time, there's been only one suicide. And it was in one of the same cells that Troutman was in during the 7 days that he was in general population.
But that cell is now a no bars cell, right?
This is a no bar cell. That he was okay. in. I mean, inmates, he has been in what they call a community correction center, TCC, that has a shower where somebody has committed suicide. Inmate. The thing is, when he was released from medical, he had all the tools to commit suicide. He had his sheets and his shoe spool. He could have committed suicide in Correct Care Solution, or excuse me, in the community correction center, or he could have committed suicide in the one room at a push button for the toilet where an inmate tied shoestrings around it and hung himself. That was non-suicidal. And since this period of time, there's only been one suicide. And part of the reason was is after this incident, we took that control of X-Jail out of medical's position. But you know, this was a case where everybody was relied upon medical facts, relied upon the medical evidence of death. And Cox never had knowledge that there was a substantial risk of suicide or a strong likelihood of suicide. That this inmate had been cleared from general population and there was no bars for it. Cox didn't deserve any behavior. If you look at a lot of the other cases where they found liability, it's where people observe behavior of suicide and ignore it. This person didn't have any other behavior after his initial event, which he was cleared from. And that is a extremely important fact when you're looking at deliberate indifference. You know, to look at this case as strictly a negligence case, that's what state courts for. But when you're dealing with constitutional life, right, it's, were we doing the right thing?
Yeah. Mr. Ogman, let me, I'm sorry, Judge Daughtry, go ahead. Okay, well, Mr. Ogman, let me ask you this. In your briefing, it seems to be a conflicting statement that I really want you to address. You say in your brief that Charles was cleared to move everywhere when he was cleared to general population. In another place, you say Cox knew he needed verbal confirmation before moving Charles to solitary. If he was cleared to move everywhere, why did Cox need confirmation before moving him to solitary?
Well, generally, to understand that the email that had that notation in it, that email had the phone number for calling the medical department, not mental health. And a lot of times you obtain clearance for individuals because they might have epilepsy, they might have heart conditions, and you don't want those individuals in a single cell. That might have been a typo, because what I meant to say is Cox did not need that authority. He called for it, but then he looked down in X-Jail and saw the medical record that said he was released to general population. And then coupled with the fact that there is no bars alert listed, that means he can go anywhere in the jail. He's free to go. Had there been a no bars alert put on there by medical, Trotman could not have gone to this bar. But on that night when he was taken up there, he never mentioned any kind of suicidal ideation to any of the individual officers who were there. And that's a crucial matter when dealing with suicide. To be deliberately indifferent in those situations, you have to know that there's suicidal ideation and suicide is imminent. There was neither of those present in this particular case. And again, whether it was incorrect or not, prison officials are not medical people, and they relied upon medical advice that he would clear to go. And for 7 days, again, in that 7 day period, if you had something where he expressed any sort of suicidal ideation, it would have all changed. But you had no indication of any suicidal ideation whatsoever. And when you look at Director Bolton, his policies were intact. He had policies, he did different kinds of things to stop this suicide.
Were these policies that you say were present to stop these suicides, were they in writing and were people consistently trained on those policies?
Yes, Your Honor, they were.
Okay, so what obligation then was placed on Mr. Bolton in lieu of the number of suicides that occurred in a very short period of time, 24 months, and six suicides?
Well, I'm dealing with this particular case, but all those suicides had a lot of different causes. And some of them were where individuals, they had no knowledge that they were suicidal. Like the last one they had, this person was in a holding cell because he had broken a rule in the booking center, and they were working on his paperwork to release him. So he wasn't even going to be a long time prisoner. He's going to be out in an hour, and he commits suicide. I mean, there's no rhyme or reason to why people commit suicide. It's very difficult to predict. And all of these, they didn't have prior suicides when they killed themselves.
Okay, and so tell me one last time why the analysis in Kingsley should be limited to excessive force cases governed by the Eighth Amendment and not be imported or applied in these 14th Amendment cases.
Well, I think that this particular case, like Griffith versus Franklin County, wouldn't make a difference, because I think that there was objective reasonableness in what Cox did, because he had medical records that he was relying upon that this individual was released to general population, coupled with the fact that there was not a no bars rule. On the other hand, I think excessive forces cases involve, I don't think any Section 1983 case is supposed to be a negligence case. It's a higher standard all the way. If you move deliberate indifference into to recklessness, civil recklessness, I think that becomes a civil case. And that's what you have in state court without filing a 1983 case. I think it changes the dynamic with medical cases.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Gerhardt, we will now hear your rebuttal. You have your full rebuttal. Did you reserve rebuttal? Yes, 3 minutes.
Let's start with this claim that Mr. Troutman was released to general population and therefore there's no case. That can't be right. He was released to general population on November 17th. On the 17th, his daughter talked to him and knew that something was wrong with him and called the jail. On the 17th, on the 18th, he got in an altercation with another inmate and had to be moved. On the 21st, he got into a fight with another inmate, and that's why he was being sent to discipline, so that he could have a hearing for discipline. He was obviously has different risk factors on the 24th than he had back on the 17th. And all we're saying is that Cox, as a classification officer, had a duty to get him evaluated before he puts him in a more dangerous single cell with bars. Is that duty to be evaluated under the deliberate indifference standard of the Eighth Amendment or under the objective reasonableness standard of the 14th Amendment? It has to be under the objective reasonableness standard, as four circuits have now declared with respect to non-use of force claims. And one other point that may be helpful, especially Judge Radler, to your concern. There is a context where the term deliberate indifference doesn't have the subjective.
Okay, just a moment, sir. I think we've lost Judge Radler. So let's.
I'm here.
Oh, are you there? Okay, I didn't see you up on the. Sorry. Continue, Mr.
That's okay.
Sorry.
You may have lost me on the argument. You may have lost me on the argument, but we're not done yet. So keep going.
I'll give it a try. There's a context where deliberate indifference doesn't trigger subjective perception. If you look at Canton versus Harris, where you're looking at whether a government policy is the moving force behind a violation, and you look at something like training, if you show that a person's duties is obviously going to put them in touch with citizens in a certain way, like capturing felons, and you give them a gun, which is the example in Canton, and you don't train them how to use the gun and when to shoot and don't shoot, that's deliberate indifference to the health and safety of the citizens. Similarly here, you could argue or you could set a deliberate indifference term to describe the type of objective reasonableness that you have to go through in order to find liability under the 14th Amendment.
In the first case, there's liability because the officer then shoots somebody?
Yes.
Right, and so in this case, it's the opposite. There was no action. I mean, I understand your example of a case where someone acts, and then that's excessive force, but here there's an absence of action.
He had a duty to refer to medical, and he failed to do that duty, and then he moved him. So he affirmatively moved him into a more dangerous cell. So in that sense, there's certainly affirmative action that led to the suicide. It was a moving force behind the suicide. At any rate, I do ask that you consider adopting the Kingsley standard, and under either standard, there are plenty of contested issues of fact that should send this case back for trial in the district court. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Gerhardt. This matter is submitted. We thank you for your argument. We will issue a ruling in due course.